How are investors responding to a big earnings week, but a smaller than expected GDP number? This is The Markets. Hi, I'm Sam Grobart. Today, I'm joined by Brian Garrett, who leads the equity execution team on the cross-asset sales desk in Global Banking and Markets. Brian, thanks so much for joining us today.
Sam, thanks for having me.
So we've been seeing some big moves in indices in the past week, and you recently wrote that we should, quote, expect the chop to continue. What's leading you to that conclusion?
I think it's important to take a step back and remember what the market has done since the Fed pivot in late October through the end of the first quarter. We had one of the highest Sharpe ratio rallies in the last 30 years over the last 6 or 7 months, where you've got an extremely powerful rally in equity markets with very little give back along the way. Market participants got lulled into this low volatility, high return environment over the last week and a half, two weeks. We saw a sell-off in markets, and unfortunately, that has started to pull liquidity out of the equity market. So you now have multiple opposing factors that are at odds. The first, you've got a systematic community that was running extremely long equity indices across the globe, where momentum thresholds start to get triggered when you have a relatively sturdy, high durable rally in equities with a quick sell-off. So you've got that supply hitting the market at a time when futures liquidity is at the lowest level of, call it, 6 to 8 months. And then you've also got a dynamic where effectively there's systematic option selling that has market makers long gamma, in which case they kind of trade against the 1 or 2 day momentum of whatever the S&P is doing. So as we rally, they sell. As we sell off, they buy. So it dampens volatility in the market.
Right. So there's no countervailing force.
Correct.
To the systematic movements that you were describing.
Correct. So you've got increased supply, lower liquidity, and no dealer footprint to protect the market.
Uh-huh.
So you can see an expansion in kind of intraday volatility. But on the other side, you've got positive fundamentals, positive consumer data. Spending data continues to be strong. Delinquencies are low. So at this exact point in time, you've got a push and a pull from multiple factors.
Gotcha. This has been a huge week for earnings. What are you seeing out of all the big reports coming from the major corporates?
Yeah, totally. There's a lot of unrealized P&L, especially in the kind of blistering AI tech piece of the market. I think the average stock in our AI basket is up 15% year to date versus the average stock in the S&P is only up 4%.
So that's a pretty big gap. Yeah.
Yeah. So you've got a high bar on earnings. And I think that we're starting to see even good prints get faded because you're in an environment where overall volatility is higher.
Right.
There is a lot of kind of unrealized P&L in these names. And if you don't, you know, knock the cover off the ball, the market is going to size their positions. And I think we're seeing an earnings report that could have led to a name down 3 or 4%. Is now trading down 5 or 6% as a function of just people managing their risk.
So I just want to sit with this one for a second. Is what you're saying that you've got this sort of almost incredibly bright, shiny object, which is AI earnings, and that is somewhat not distorting, but changing the expectations that investors have on non-AI companies?
Through the beginning of the year, there's the have and the have-nots, right? Like AI, GLP-1, et cetera, those names have all rallied where the rest of the market has been left behind. So I think that you've got the year-to-date winners have an extremely high bar that has been set for them that if they can't overcome, their stocks could potentially see a little bit more aggressive sell-off than otherwise would have been.
Got it.
And then you've got names that were massive underperformers where the bar is much lower and you could have negative momentum trends following these things that are short, where now they beat that low bar and you see an outsized rally on earnings.
Got it. Brian, we've been seeing an uptick in 10-year Treasury yields lately. What does that mean for markets? And how are investors responding to it?
So I think there's two things that can take Treasury yields higher. One of those is stronger growth for the economy. And the other is, unfortunately, inflation readings,
right,
which can be at odds with the Fed's 2% target and soft landing narrative. If you get higher yields as a function of stronger growth and stronger job data, I think the equity market can certainly handle a 10-year in the high fours, low fives. But where we see the apprehension in the market is when you get blistering hot inflation prints, which muddy the outlook for fiscal policy and financial conditions for the U.S. as a whole.
Right.
I think one of the thing to piece in that question is that there's also a function of absolute level of rate and velocity of rate.
Right.
The equity market can handle higher interest rate environments, again, assuming growth is good. But what they can't handle is when you have extremely choppy moves within the interest rate environment over short periods of time. So when the 10-year yield is averaging a 15 basis point intraday band, the VIX trades about 25. Last night, the VIX closed at 16. So you're talking about if the bands in the fixed income market expand, you could expect the equity market to be about 1.5 times as volatile as it has been.
Interesting. Brian, we just got GDP data as we sat down to record this. And I was wondering if you can talk a little bit about the relationship between markets and economic data. And has that relationship changed in the past few weeks?
We need to bifurcate economic data in two camps. I think the first camp is inflation data and the second camp is everything else.
Okay.
GDP data came in, unfortunately, low this morning. The market has responded, but I think that overall, jobs and consumer are the most important thing, and both of which continue to be quite strong. The market is also extremely focused on when the Fed is going to have their first cut.
Of course.
And so I think that during the Fed pivot in late 2023 and in subsequent interviews, Jerome Powell has made it very clear that the Fed is not afraid to cut in a high growth environment, but is very reticent to cut if they haven't, quote unquote, beaten back inflation. So again, I think that's why you need to bifurcate economic data between inflation and everything else, just because they're two very different kind of outcomes for the market.
They can move in very different directions.
Correct.
And Brian, last question, what's going to be on your radar for next week?
As an equity derivatives guy, I can't hear that question without looking at what the implied move is between now and the end of next week, which for the S&P is 2%, which is actually pretty high, all things considered. Unfortunately, I've got three things that are on my mind, none of which are the FOMC.
Okay.
It's earnings, jobs, and Janet. First is earnings. You have multiple mega caps that'll all be reporting. Realized moves so far in this earnings season have been quite large, and so many market participants will be focused on that. The second thing on my radar is obviously non-farm payrolls on Friday. I've done this job for almost 20 years, and I've never missed an NFP report on the desk. Bottom line is, as I mentioned, a lot of the predications for soft landing, positive economy, positive equity hinges on strong jobs. So if you aren't watching NFP every month and jobless claims every Thursday, you should either be well hedged or in cash.
Okay. Good to know. And your third one, you were saying Janet.
And the third one is Janet Yellen. So the Treasury is going to issue their QRA next week.
What's QRA?
QRA stands for quarterly refunding announcement, where they'll dictate the amount of issuance that they will have in either bills or bonds.
Okay.
So this actually has a very large implication for liquidity in the fixed income market. And so I think that's definitely something that's going to be on my radar as well.
Brian Garrett, thank you so much.
Thanks, Sam. Appreciate it.
That does it for another episode of The Markets. Be sure to find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. To learn more, please visit us at gs.com and subscribe to Briefings, our weekly newsletter on the global economy. I'm Sam Grobart. Thanks so much for listening. The opinions and views expressed in this program may not necessarily reflect the institutional views of Goldman Sachs or its affiliates. This program should not be copied, distributed, published, or reproduced in whole or in part, or disclosed by any recipient to any other person without the express written consent of Goldman Sachs. Each name of a third-party organization mentioned in this program is the property of the company to which it relates, is used here strictly for informational and identification purposes only, and is not used to imply any ownership or license rights between any such company and Goldman Sachs. The content of this program does not constitute a recommendation from any Goldman Sachs entity to the recipient and is provided for informational purposes only. Goldman Sachs is not providing any financial, economic, legal, investment, accounting, or tax advice through this program or to its recipient. Neither Goldman Sachs nor any of its affiliates makes any representation or warranty, express or implied, as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this program and any liability, therefore, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is expressly disclaimed. Our theme music was composed by Soundboard.